Turn with me to the book of Esther in chapter 6. Next week we'll be in Esther chapter 7. So if you want to, you can go ahead and read that this week and you'll get an idea of what we're going to be looking at here. Following our sermon this morning, we're going to take communion together in celebration and of worship of Jesus and what he has done for us. So you'll be ready for that here in a little bit. But we're in Esther 6 right now. And so in Esther chapter 6, you know, things are rarely what they seem. For those of you who are parents of toddlers, or of those of you that have had toddlers at one point, parents of toddlers, you know things are most likely not going well when it's quiet. When there's silence, right? You know things aren't going well. And so silence doesn't always mean everything's good. Silence usually means that somebody's writing their name on the wall. Silence means somebody's probably playing in the toilet or pulling all the toilet paper off the roll. Silence means somebody's in the kitchen dumping all the salt out. Silence means the dog's getting a haircut. And it goes on and on and on and on, right? Well, sometimes things aren't the way they seem. There was one time we were at Chuck E. Cheese when our kids, Dylan and Meyer, were very young. And we were hanging out there and having fun, playing games and eating pizza in the ball pit, the slides and all those things. And we're just having fun as a family. If I remember right, and I'll tell you this again. Anytime I tell a story, you have to confirm it with Anne, because she'll tell you the actual events that happened, and I'll just tell you what I thought happened because I was there. But we're having fun, and I believe my parents were there with us, and we're doing this, and you know, all of a sudden there's silence. And we look around, and Maya is gone. We don't know where she is. She's very young at this time. Anne will tell you exactly how old she is because I don't remember. But she's gone. We knew something wasn't right, and so we started to look for her. But silence wasn't golden in that moment because she was gone. And we started to frantically look all around that whole place. We checked the place. We checked, you know, the video games, the play place, the bathrooms. We even looked outside. We went all around that place, and we could not find Maya. Panic was starting to set in, right? And we're looking and we're looking. And then finally, I probably got it wrong, but Ann found her. And she was playing in the ball pit without a care in the world. Like, she thought everything was fine, and we didn't, you know? And, she was having fun. We were going crazy until finally we see her, and all of our fears are gone, right? Like, we're relieved of our fears. And so, have you ever noticed that when things go wrong, and you think, well, nothing can get worse than this, it often does. It gets worse still, right? It just seems like things can't possibly get any worse, but it does. Where things are as bad as they can probably be, we think, and it gets worse. This is the case for Mordecai right here, as we're seeing in Esther chapter 6. Not only is he going to die 1 year from now, because the edict went out that every Jew in the province and the kingdom of Persia are going to die 1 year from that date, things are about to get worse for Mordecai. And not only, and so when things seem bad, it got worse, right? Because there was a 75-foot gallows being made. And Mordecai didn't know this yet, but the next day he was going to die on that 75-foot gallows. If you remember what's been happening in this story, the king is looking for a new queen. First one didn't do what he liked, so he got rid of her. And they went throughout the whole kingdom of Persia looking for a new queen. And the king picks Esther. Doesn't know what her background, what her heritage is, what nationality she is. And she becomes the queen. And this man Haman, though, begins to rise up in the kingdom, and the king really likes him, and he goes to the king and he says, because he has this vendetta, this grudge with the Jews that he's been heard about from his whole life, that stems back all the way to 1 Samuel chapter 15, which even actually goes back to Exodus chapter 28, even beyond that. It's just this with this group of people. And he wants, now that he's in this high position, he wants to get rid of the people that he hates the most. And so he goes after them, he goes to the king, and he says, King, these people aren't good for your kingdom, we ought to just wipe them out. And he talks so well, the king says, yeah, that's a great idea, let's get rid of all of these people 1 year from now. And so Mordecai, he goes to Esther, and Mordecai is the cousin of Esther, and he raised her as his own daughter after her parents died. And he says, who knows, maybe God put you here for such a time as this to save our people. And she says, okay, I will go before the king, and if I die, I die. And so they fast for 3 days, and she goes. And we're getting into this story of what God is doing and how God is working. But Mordecai really has bugged Haman. And Haman wants to see him dead on these gallows. And there's some things in these verses in chapter 6 that I want to highlight this morning that I think are relevant for our lives today. So I want you to look at these with me. And the first thing would be, when all seems lost in your life, guess what? It's not. When it seems like there's no way out of this situation, there's a way. Mordecai could have just given up here. All these things were happening to him and his people, and he could have just said, I mean, that's it, I'm done. This king wasn't a Jew. He didn't have any interest in the Jews. Like I said, his closest friend was Haman, and he held this grudge against the Jews, and he wanted them all gone. Haman's plan to get rid of them seems to be working so far. It is working so far that this is going to happen 1 year from that edict going out into all of the nation. And Esther was the queen. But if the king were to find out that she was a Jew, she could probably lose her life as well. And so when it seems like things can't get any worse, they sure can. And at this moment, like I said, something is happening. Mordecai didn't know this yet, but something was waiting for him. Haman was building these gallows, planning on getting rid of Mordecai the very next day from this. But Mordecai, we see from him, he's not giving up. He isn't thinking, oh, why me? Why is this going on? This isn't fair. What a horrible life I have. No, that's not what we see from him. He is in this moment trusting God. When all seems lost in your life, it's not. It's not. But when, you know, what we want to do is we want to trust God when it seems like everything is lost. We want to wait to see what he is going to do in our lives in those moments. And when he calls us to do something and to step out and to do this or whatever it is, we have to be ready to do it. But when all things seem lost, it's not. The second thing we see from these verses, this chapter, is that when it seems no one knows what's going on in your life, someone usually does. Someone does. Do you remember a few chapters before this that Mordecai, he had saved the king's life? He'd heard of a conspiracy between two of the gatekeepers of the palace that they were upset with the king and they wanted to kill him. And so Mordecai went to Esther. And he told her about this. And Esther took that and went to the king. The king found it out and found out that this was true. And he dealt with those two people. They were gone from their position. Gone from this world even. And Esther said to the king, it is Mordecai who found this out. Mordecai came and told me, and I'm telling that to you. And even though Mordecai saved the king's life, we saw that nothing was done for him. He didn't get anything out of it. Maybe he wasn't doing it to get anything, but nothing happened. There was no reward for him there. And it seemed like nobody had remembered that he had saved the king. And so Mordecai, he just went on with his life. He kept living his life. He was unnoticed. He was unrewarded. He was underappreciated. And that was until this night right here in Esther chapter 6. So if you have your Bibles, let's look at Esther chapter 6, verse 1 and 2. It says, on the night that the king, or on that night, the king could not sleep. And he gave orders to bring the book of memorable deeds, the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold, who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So that night, the king couldn't sleep. So he brings somebody in that they would read to him the chronicles of his kingdom so that maybe he was thinking, this will bore me to death and I'll fall asleep. Maybe I'll get some sleep out of this night. And as he listens to this guy reading to him the chronicles of his kingdom, he hears the record of that time when Mordecai saved his life. And this grabs his attention and he asks, like, what did we do for this guy? Look at verse 3. It's the very question in verse 3. He says, and the king said, what honor or distinction has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? And the king's young men who attended him said, nothing has been done for him. You see, sometimes the smallest thing can cause the biggest results. Sometimes the smallest thing can cause the biggest results. Have you ever noticed that in your life? Have you ever seen that to be true? Because that's what this shows us here. While everybody else in the kingdom is sleeping, most likely, the king isn't. He can't sleep that night. And I think this is so amazing that he's just having trouble there. He can't sleep. Of all the nights that the king can't sleep, it's this very night. And the king didn't know anything about the plan of Haman for the next day, that he wanted to kill Mordecai on those 70-foot, 5-foot gallows. Haman was going to come and tell him about that the next morning. But as Haman and Mordecai sleep, the king can't. And it says there in verse 1, on that night. See, that's the way God works. See, at just the right moment, he steps in. He does the unexpected. When no one seems to notice or care what is happening in your life, God notices and he cares and he's there with you in that. It was on that night. Here on that night, God stirs the heart of the king. And the king finally remembers that he owes Mordecai his very own life. Before this night, Mordecai didn't mean much to the king. But right now, at this moment, he means everything. He's like the top priority of the king. And has there ever been a time in your life, maybe it's a recent time in your life, where you just did something and you weren't recognized for it, no one thanked you, you didn't receive a reward? Maybe even somebody else got that reward, but you didn't. Have you done the hard thing, the courageous thing, and somebody else gets that reward? That's what happened to Mordecai here. And we can learn something from his life. Mordecai doesn't go after anyone for vengeance here. He's not upset. Even after everything that's happened to him, he doesn't go after anyone. He doesn't try to get back at Haman. Even when he has the chance to get back at him, he doesn't try. He doesn't speak evil against him. And so we need to guard our hearts like Mordecai does here in chapter 6 and throughout this whole story. What we see in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10, says, for God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for his name in serving the saints as you still do. That's not who God is. It's not what he does. He doesn't forget. And when no one else notices, or it seems like no one else sees, God does, though. He sees it. When no one else remembers, God writes it down. Psalm 56, verse 8. You have kept count of my tossings, put my tears in your bottle, are they not in your book? He will reward us for the things that we do. Be encouraged, okay? Be encouraged. There will be a day when you will receive a reward. And maybe it won't happen in this life like it does here for Mordecai, as we're going to see, but you will someday get it. God isn't unjust to overlook the things that you do. Next thing we see here is that when everything is going great, watch out, because things can change. Anytime things are going really well for you, you better look and see what's around the corner, because things can change. And it's actually too bad for Haman that he didn't understand this principle. Maybe he did, and maybe his pride got in the way and caused him to forget this. I don't know, but he doesn't seem to notice. And as soon as the king's heart was melted by what he heard, that nothing had been done for Mordecai, he begins to start thinking about what can we do for him? What needs to be done for him? Like, what kind of reward does he deserve for saving my life? And as he thought about this, still not sleeping, he decides, you know what? I need somebody to help me come up with a plan for him. Like, what can we do to reward him? So he starts looking for somebody. Look at verse 4 and 5. And the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hanged on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's young men told him, "Haman is there standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." Now this is another incredible moment right here, what we see. I'm guessing, I'm not 100% sure, but as I think through the events that are happening in this night, I'm guessing it's probably about 5 or 6 in the morning, maybe a little later. But you think about that for a second, right? Because I can only imagine that Haman couldn't wait any longer to get to the king to tell him about the gallows he made for Mordecai. Like, you got to let me kill him. Hang him on that thing. And so he needed permission for it, so he wanted to be the first in line to see the king. The king had been up all night, couldn't sleep, heard the chronicles of his kingdom, heard the story of Mordecai, and now he's thinking, how am I going to reward him? I need somebody's help. And so he's out to see if anybody's around. And as Haman has come to the palace, he hears the king say, "Well, send him in, send Haman in." And the king thinks, "All right, great, I have somebody now who can help me come up with a reward for Mordecai and how he saved my life." And Haman, maybe he's thinking as he's looking out the windows of the entrance to the palace, he's thinking about the gallows he built right outside of his house. And he's thinking, "All right, gallows, just one more minute. There's going to be somebody on you soon. Hold on." And so he goes into the king's court to see the king. And before he can say anything to the king about what his plan is to get rid of Mordecai on those gallows, the king starts talking to him, and this shocked Haman. Look at verse 6. So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What should be done to the man whom the king delights to honor?" And Haman said to himself, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" So when the king asks him this question, right, who do you think Haman's thinking about? Well, it tells us right there, he's thinking about himself. Who else, he thinks, would the king talk about than me? Who else would he want to honor other than me? This is the guy who the night before had gone back to his house to get all of his friends together and his wife with them, and he was telling him how great he is. "You guys, you don't even know how good I am, how great I am in this kingdom. I got all this money. I got all of these sons. I got, you know, I'm so important to the king. I was at this banquet with just the king and the queen, and they're inviting me to another tomorrow night." And he's bragging about how great he is. He's so important, he thinks. So who else deserves this honor than me? This is the moment that Haman has probably been dreaming of his entire life. So he starts to think, what would I want the most? What would I want to be rewarded with? And so he lists everything that he would want to get in a reward. And we see this in verse 7 And it says, and Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and the horse that the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown is set. And let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let them dress the man who the king delights to honor, and let them lead them on the horse through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. And the king's like, well, yes, great idea. Let's do that. I couldn't come up with a better plan than that. So let's do that. Thanks so much, Haman. Now, what happens next is such an incredible moment, right? Verse 10. It says, then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robes off, and or take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so to Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate. Leave out nothing that you have mentioned. Now, can you imagine what must have been going on in Haman's mind in this moment? He's like, wait, what? What name did you just say? What's the person you want to give honor to and give all these rewards to? No, you didn't say Mordecai, did you? You said Haman, right? You said me. He's kind of thinking, what is going on here? And then the king says to Haman, guess what? You're going to be the official that does this for Mordecai. You're going to do all of these things for him. You're going to be the one who leads him through the city, the streets, on a horse, and you are going to tell everybody how great he is. Can you imagine the humiliation that must have been for him? Like, to have to do this? I can't imagine how Haman went through with all of this. I imagine him having the grumpiest, most sourest face there ever was as he led Mordecai through the streets. And he was declaring all these great things about Mordecai. And it's hard not to smile when you read this next verse. Look at verse 11. It says, so Haman took the robes and the horse, and he dressed Mordecai and led him through the square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. See, things have turned very quickly on Haman here. Things have been going very well for him. Now he's got to do this. Like, he thought he had everything going his way. His enemies were about to be destroyed. This grudge he's held from the beginning of his life against the Jewish people for what has happened way back to his relatives, and he's just ready to pounce on them. And so now, though, he has to bring honor to the person that he hates the most. And then we have Mordecai here. Here he is. He's sitting on top of this horse. He's dressed in royal attire. He's most likely the most surprised person in the whole kingdom. Like, whoa, how'd this happen, right? He had no idea the king had remembered the story. And that's the beauty of this whole story in the book of Esther that comes from history, right? This true story. Mordecai wasn't a proud person. He wasn't a vengeful person. He wasn't even making fun of Haman for having to do this for him through the streets. According to these verses that we read here, Mordecai kept his mouth shut. He didn't say anything. He just sat there. And this might be the greatest part of this whole thing. Mordecai just sits there in silence. And it's rare for people to be promoted to a high place where everybody sees this promotion and not crave the spotlight and not rub it in to everybody else, to people like Haman. Soft-spoken, genuinely humble celebrities are a very rare thing. And the next thing that we read here is Mordecai returned to the king's gate. It's a short phrase, and it's really easy to miss. He goes right back to the king's gate, but I think it's a very wonderful thing here, and I want us to see this. Because it didn't say that Mordecai decided it was time for a major promotion in his life now that he's had this. No. Now, why is this significant? Why is this matter to us? Because this is where Mordecai has been the whole time, at the king's gate. This honor of riding on the horse, wearing the king's robes and the crown, and being told about how great he is, doesn't go to his head. You see, a proud and ambitious person would have said, I'm done with being in the king's ear. That was my old position. But now that I've had this honor, I deserve something else. I deserve a greater place in the kingdom. After all of this, that's what I deserve. That's what a normal person probably would do. They'd think this way. Mordecai instead seems to have thought, if the palace is where God wants me to be, then God's going to bring me there. But God has to bring me there. I'm not going after it. And this is a good place for us to look at our own lives this morning. Has God promoted you? Has God honored you in the places that you weren't before? Have you come to a place of prosperity and maybe even popularity? Are you revered in the eyes of the people around you? If so, the question is are you comfortable at the king's gate? Are you as comfortable there? Or do you have to be in the palace? Do you have to be in something greater? Do you have to be treated with special care and not be bothered with everyday problems? Mordecai just says, just drop me off where I was. That was great. That was fun. But just take me back to where I was. No matter what happens to you in your life, remember where you came from. You'll find that the best place for us is pretty close to our roots. Doesn't mean we can't grow. Doesn't mean we can't get to things better. But we just find that's where our best place is. Another thing we see here. Go back and forth. That's the one I want. When it doesn't seem like there's any justice in life, be ready. There will be justice. There will be a time when justice comes. Now, like we all want justice, right? We do. We want justice to happen in life. When things aren't going right, when things are happening wrong, we want to see justice happen. Here in Esther, we want to see Haman get what he deserves. Actually, that's really what we crave in our lives is justice. We crave that. Especially when there's somebody like Haman who has acted the way that they have and it seems like they're getting away with it. We cry out for justice. We want that. Look at verse 12 here, chapter 6. It says, then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning with his head covered. And Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that had happened to him. Now, if you remember, the last time Haman went home, he gathered all his friends and his wife, and he told them how great he was. This time, the next morning, he comes home, or next afternoon, whenever this is, and he comes home complaining about what has just happened. Actually, I'm going to say this is probably in the evening, not morning or afternoon. This is the evening because we'll see that in a second. But have you ever noticed that people who are like Haman always blame other people for all the things that are going wrong in their life? It's never, oh, God taught me this in this part of my life. He taught me this valuable lesson when I went through this hard thing. Or I was humbled by this thing. Or, you know, through this hard thing that I went through, I gained this in my life. Or this thing seemed to have just crushed me. It was so hard, but it has taught me to trust God in my life. We don't hear that with Haman here. Instead, it's more like, if it had not been for them, things would have been better. If it wouldn't have been for my boss, this would have happened, you know, or so on and so on. He tells them everything that happened here, and he doesn't say any of it's his own fault. Verse 13 goes on, and it says, then his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of the Jewish people, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. That actually sounds a lot like a verse in Genesis. They were very right in saying this to him because we see this in Scripture. In fact, it's in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. And it says, now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. What this is really saying here is that God will protect his people. And if you curse them, then you're going to pay a terrible price for it. Never once in Haman's plan to kill Mordecai and all of the Jews had God ignored that. Had he forgotten it? He knew it. He didn't wipe it away and say, oh, no big deal. God had heard these statements. He had not missed them. He had seen the pride in Haman's heart, the violence and prejudice motives behind his plans here. God may be invisible, but he wasn't out of touch. He wasn't passive in this. He hadn't forgotten his people, and he hadn't forgotten his promises to them. And then we see in verse 14 of chapter 6, while they were yet talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried to bring Haman to the feast that Esther prepared. So this is the second banquet, right? It's dinner time now. And they come and they grab him. So they're just starting this conversation, and he has to go. Really, before he could think about what they were saying to him, he was summoned to this second banquet where he'd be with the king and the queen. And this, as we're going to see next week, is the banquet that brings him down. And I wonder when he left his house if he took another look at those gallows that were built right outside of his house. The ones that he had built for Mordecai. I wonder what he must have thought about those as he walked by those. And this just shows us here that when God seems absent, he's actually very present with us. Even when you think that you have lost everything in your life, God uses that to show you that he's still in charge, and he's bringing us maybe even to our knees in prayer and in trust of him. He's saying, I just want you to know how great I am, that I'm with you, that I'm working through these things. Sometimes things are so hard, it brings us to our knees. And all we have is God to lean to and lean on and go to. And that's a great place to be. God seems so distant to them here. But as we see in all of this, he's working through all of it to bring rescue for his people. And so let me ask you this morning. Where are you in this story of Esther? Have you been building your kingdom, establishing your own name, making it so big so people will take notice of you? Have you walked over and through people to get there? Or maybe you feel like God has been absent in your life. Or there just seems to be this hold in your life. Or things aren't moving, or at least not moving the way you want them to. Does God seem distant to you and from you? Now, he may feel absent, but let me just tell you here this morning, just like with Esther and Mordecai, he has been present all along. He has not left you. He knows your heart. He knows the true condition of your soul. He even knows the hidden impurities that we have in our hearts and the motives that we have and why we do things. He knows the deep wickedness that we have in our lives. And he sees us. And he won't turn away from you. He loves you. And what we see here in all of this is that God will always have his way. He's not impressed with earthly kingdoms and personal towers filled with pride and prestige and wealth and fame. He's impressed with a humble heart that comes to him on his own terms. And what we see here is that Mordecai and Esther understood this. Haman never learned it. But we can't just look at Mordecai and Esther or even Haman here this morning. We have to look at something else. We have to look at ourselves. There's nothing that I can say here this morning that will force you to your knees and surrender to God. That's actually God's job, and let me tell you, he's very good at that. But he has never turned his back on anyone who truly comes to him by the way of Jesus and of the cross. And wherever you are, whatever it is that you're going through, God has not abandoned you. He's working in your situation. And so my advice to you is to come to him, allow him to lead you through whatever it is that you're going through, and just see how he works. Put your hope and your trust in him. He has not left you. And the beautiful thing is we have reminders of that. And one of the reminders that we have of all of this is communion. That God has not left us. That he's with us and he cares about what we're going through. Because he came down and he joined in our suffering and gave his life for us.